I used to love my morning coffee until it stopped loving me back. The bloating, the discomfort, it just wasn't worth it anymore. Then I found Everyday Dose, coffee with benefits. It's real coffee blended with mushrooms, collagen, and nootropics. Now I get my morning ritual without the crash or the discomfort. The Black Friday sale is on. Get 61% off your first coffee plus starter kit, a free A2 probiotic creamer, and over $100 in free gifts. Plus, you could win $100 cash or even get your entire order refunded. Head to everydaydose.com/podcast or use code podcast at checkout.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Positively Trek. I'm Dan Gunther, and it is the end of November, which means we are taking a look at the month's Star Trek comics, and I cannot do this alone, so my partner on this journey tonight is Brandi Jackala. Brandi, welcome back to Positively Trek.
Thank you. This is one of my favorite times of the month. Possibly my most favorite, except when we do Unready Room.
Excellent. Yeah. Oh, man. Unready Room. I missed that already.
I know.
Can't wait. It's already going to be just in a little over a month and a half, probably. About 2 months.
I can't believe it's that close.
Yeah. About 2 months when we're recording this. When it comes out, it'll be like a month and a half.
Yeah. Well, it's yeah.
Crazy. So. Well, we're not talking about Starfleet Academy yet, we are talking about November's Star Trek comics, and we're going to get right down to it because we've got a full slate this month. We have 5 issues to talk about. Star Trek Red Shirts number 4, Star Trek Lower Decks number 13, Strange New Worlds, The Seeds of Salvation number 3, The Last Starship number 2, and Voyager Homecoming number 3. That's too many comics.
So many threes, too.
Yeah, we're right in the middle of a bunch of series. It's kind of funny.
Yeah.
Well, let's jump right in with the first one. So the first comic that came out in November the 5th, was Star Trek Red Shirts number 4, written by Christopher Cantwell with art by Megan Levins. So this was the publisher's description. Ensigns Rod and Miller find themselves on a dark ship and face to face with Klingons. The two red shirts are accused of being spies, and their captors brutalize and torture them for any information they can get on how the Romulans were able to access a Starfleet subspace antenna feed. Meanwhile, Demetrio, Amiga, and Lanier engage in a tense starship battle with a Romulan bird of prey. If all 6 remaining red shirts are going to make it off Arconia 89 alive, someone is going to have to make a sacrifice. But for what? How many red shirts have died to ferret out the Romulans? There must be more to the story than Starfleet is letting on.
Yeah, no kidding.
I want to know who writes the descriptions. Like, is it the editor? Is it the person in charge of Star Trek comics? Is it the writer of the comic? Because the red shirts ones are always like so detailed.
Mm-hmm. And really dramatic, but that's mm-hmm. fitting of the series. The series is very dramatic. This is not your mama's Star Trek. This is actually, my mom would probably just eat it up anyway, where she's
my
still
mom too, actually. Yeah.
So it is my mama's Star Trek. All Star Trek was my mama's Star Trek. She taught me well.
Nice. And actually the fact that it's TOS era means mm-hmm. like, yeah, it's actually, I think this actually is my mom's Star Trek.
I agree completely. it's just a funny thing that came out of my mouth, and I'm like, wait a minute.
Well, to start out with in this issue, we have, of course, our roster of red shirts, and it is getting very thin indeed. We have only 5 remaining at the start of this comic, and significantly less by the end. We'll get there. Mm. But yeah, we have Lieutenant Midge Demetrio, Lieutenant Salgado Amiga, and Lieutenant Rene Lanier on the, I guess it turns out to be a ship, the base on Arconia 89. And then, of course, Ensign Chip Miller and Ensign Zaina Rod, who were beamed up by the Klingons in the last issue and find themselves in a tricky situation there. So that's it from the original, it was 11, I think. Just 5 left. not good.
No, they're living up to their name, the Red Shirts. It was a joke, but it's not a joke now.
No, far from a joke, for sure. And we get like a rundown of some of the more gruesome deaths right at the start of this issue.
Let's recap all of the impalements and the melting faces and the appendages gone wrong. And all of, grisly.
I feel like if this were a TV show, it would like, it would be previously on Star Trek Red Shirts. And that would just be, that would be it.
and it better have that MA label on it, because that stuff is for mature audiences.
Yes, absolutely. We've got our two people, like we said, they're on the Klingon ship. We have some stuff with the Romulans. We have the remaining three launching this ship turned base that's on the surface of Arconia 89. I guess, let's start with the two of them being tortured by the Klingons. Pretty brutal. Although I will say, one part made me laugh out loud when one of the Klingons says, "Experience beige."
"You experience beige."
Yes. Oh, man. Any reference to the, like, 1990s interactive VHS Star Trek game, which I did have, by the way, and loved, that was amazing. Lower Decks referenced them in the show, and now we've got a Red Shirts reference here. I love it.
Absolutely great. I loved that, too, because I really was not expecting it. And I did laugh out loud when I got to that point. I'm like, this shouldn't be funny. But it is, and I think that the writer knew what he was doing.
So, I do like, the scenes are brutal, and, rightfully so, in fitting with the rest of the tone of the comic, but I do like when Miller gets the drop on the Klingon. They underestimate these two, big time, and it bites them in the butt. Or the back of the neck, I guess.
Yeah, or the side of the neck, or, just whatever you can get a pointy part into. That's what happens. Yeah. So, the thing is that they're both pretty young. And so people assume that young people have no skills. Mm-hmm. And especially the Klingons, because you're like, oh, humans are weak. Yeah, well, one just killed your butt, so...
So we should talk about the deaths we get in this issue. So we've got that ship launching up from the surface. They're the three that aren't those two on the Klingon ship are kind of doing their thing. We get one of them blown out into space. Basically, the engineer, as he's trying to or the security guy who's acting as an engineer trying to fix stuff, gets blown out into space. And then the ship just gets blowed up real good by the Klingons, taking the other two out. Some surprisingly touching moments between them too, as Demetrio finally gets the chili recipe from Salgado, sad moment.
Not that he gets to use it. Not that she gets to use it, rather. Excuse me. And our poor guy that just gets blown out, and he's like, oh, it really is beautiful. As he's dying, he breathes his last breath and just becomes ice, basically. Yeah.
Just a little Red Shirt popsicle.
It broke my heart.
Yeah.
That one was hard on me.
Mm-hmm. With that ship blown up, the Klingons and the Romulans are negotiating a deal, basically. And the Romulans have the information from the listening post, and the Klingons have the two Starfleet Red Shirts, and it seems like a deal is going to be made here.
Maybe not.
Maybe not.
Depending on those two Red Shirts. who escape and then get caught almost immediately. Yeah.
Well, we'll see what happens. I'm holding out that someone is going to survive, and it's going to be Chip, right?
Of course.
Maybe the both of them. There's a chance.
That would be nice. It would be nice. It would go against expectations at this point. Or is this going to be a series where we just follow Chip through all of these, losing all of these people every single time.
Oh, no. If this becomes a recurring series and they just like, there's another new bunch of crew members and oh no, that's like a personal hell.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I don't want that actually.
Oh boy. Well, yeah, that's where we're left to be continued with the Romulans and the Klingons kind of, negotiating, I guess. And the Romulans would like to have a word with these two Starfleet officers. So, it looks like an interesting situation to set up the final issue, which will be next time. So, oh boy. Yeah, I guess we're going to go through these fairly quickly, like I said, because there's five this month. Yeah. So, I guess, what are your overall thoughts on this issue and maybe a rating of some kind?
This one was, I think, the hardest one so far.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad that... Chip is still with us. I'm not sure what's going to happen. He may bite it big time in the final issue. And so may Rod. I don't know. What I do know is that Revo is really getting sick of of his Tal Shiar minion.
Yeah, Nerol.
Also, yeah. Nerol, I did write that down. Here's one thing that took me out of it for a minute, because when they're taking off in the base slash ship, and oh my gosh, what's his name that got blown out? He was talking about
Lanier.
He was talking about a breach, but they spelled it. They used the wrong form of breach.
Yep.
It should have been B-R-E-A-C-H.
Yep.
And they beach, put it B-R-E-E-C-H. With an R. It wasn't a baby coming out the wrong way, folks.
Nope. Two different breaches. Absolutely. Yeah.
So that kind of took me out of it just a little bit. I got over it. But yeah, it's one of those things where I'm like, oh, come on.
Yeah, that bugged me too, for sure.
That's like using an apostrophe to pluralize in my book. Just don't. Mm-hmm. Just no.
They got it right later, I notice. Which is funny. They say yes, massive hull breach as he's being blown out into space. So, and blown out, not sect out. I listened to you, Data, when he's blown out into space.
Blow him out the airlock, except it was just blow him out the hull. So this one, oh gosh, what am I going to do here? I guess I'm going to give this three poor dead people, one of whom is now frozen and just drifting in space.
Yeah, As usual, I really enjoyed this one. And something you said, it makes a lot of sense that this one hits harder than the previous issues, because these are we've actually gotten to know these folks for a little bit. So, it hurts more that they're dying now, because, you know, they're not just nameless people. We actually have sat with them for a bit. And this one took a little bit more time with them and gave them some touching moments. And I mean, everybody kind of got their moment as, you know, the stuff happened to them in the previous issues. But yeah, this one seems to take a little bit more time to breathe, and it is definitely more meaningful to the reader. So yeah, I'm going to give this one piping hot bowl of chili made in honor of Lieutenant Salgado Amiga.
And let me tell you, that recipe sounded delicious.
It really did.
Because, that's the thing. Everybody's like, oh, beans and chili. No! No beans and chili. No beans. No.
Yeah, he was very adamant about that in his, too. So, the Salgado family recipe, it's important. It needs to be preserved, I think. So.
Yeah, and no tomatoes either in that one. Mm-hmm. I was surprised by that. I'm like, no tomatoes, okay.
No tomatoes, no beans. That's important.
I might have to write this down and see what happens the next time I make chili.
Awesome. Well, from there, we go to November 12th, which saw two issues come out that day. And the first is Star Trek Lower Decks number 13, written by Tim Sheridan with art by Vernon Smith, and we're starting a new storyline with this one. So it's time for a long overdue second contact with the species with whom the USS Cerritos made its first contact, the Lapyrians. But when the crew arrives on Lapyria bearing gifts, Freeman and company are shocked to discover the entire planet has been abandoned. While all the dwellings and infrastructure remain, there isn't a soul to be found. Where have all the Lapyrians gone? And do the Lapunians on the planet next door know anything about it? So first thing I want to say is all of that stuff in the synopsis, that happens on like the last page or two.
Yep.
That's the only time we kind of touch this story, and the rest is not about that at all.
No, it's about nonsense, which is what Lower Decks is best for.
Yes.
And it is great. There's some great nonsense in here.
Yes, there is some great nonsense. We need to talk about several things, including the Harry Mudbrand personal domestic that Boimler and Rutherford order, or should I say Lieutenant Boinkler.
Boinkler, yeah.
According to the delivery, the waybill, I guess, or whatever.
Yeah, it's funny that Boimler's just at that stage where he doesn't care that they got his name wrong. He just wants the package.
And the rank. Mm-hmm. Lieutenant Boinkler.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. I first of all, I love that the design on the box is actually not one of the androids from Mudd's android world, but one of the three Mudd's women, unfortunately titled episode, but which is, you know, kind of a nice callback. But they open it up and it's like a Norman. Not a Norma. It's like Norman from the TOS episode I, Mud, which is hilarious.
I'm just laughing about about programming Norman. And there's just this one part. They're like, I don't know. Is this supposed to go in there? And just toss this away. And that's pretty odd for Boimler, but he is really excited about this.
I do love that the original programming, too, of course, is basically he's a sex bot because that's what most people buy these for. But they do manage to get past that. They do a software update before he finishes seducing Boimler. But
I'm thinking Boimler
seemed a little into it.
I was going to say. Into it. I was going to say, yeah, I think he'd go there.
Beautiful. You really think? And then it's cleared. Oh, good afternoon, my platonic friend. Oh, boy.
Oh, good. I laughed out loud so hard during that. Oh, I also really loved... There's a reference that I really loved because I've recently discovered what this actually is, but I think it was Rutherford who was going through all the things. It's like, and she'll even play pickleball. How many people know what pickleball is? A lot of our listeners probably do not. I'm going to tell you what pickleball is. Pickleball is played on a court that is similar to a tennis court, but... Mm-hmm. The rules are very, very different. And they have these sort of oversized, almost ping pong paddle sort of things. And the ball that is used is kind of like a wiffle ball. It's got holes in it. And there's this area that is on both sides where the net is that's colored in a different color. And that is called the kitchen. And if a player from the opposite side throws or bats a ball at you and it hits in the kitchen, you have to wait for it to bounce again before you can hit it. You can't volley from there. So how do I know all this? I read a book. It was a Christmas book, and it was a romance book, and it was from an author I really, really love, and it was about pickleball, and that's how I learned about pickleball. Nice. And it is becoming huge. And
it there, is, yeah.
It's gonna, I swear it's going to be an Olympic sport someday. It isn't yet, but I think it should be because it takes... a lot of energy, just like tennis, to play this kind of game. And most of the time, it's played with doubles, but it can be played with single opponents too. It just depends on what they want to do. But yeah, pickleball, it's a big thing. Mm-hmm. I bet most of you didn't know that, and that's okay because I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's become really big in the last couple years. So yeah it's interesting. I haven't played it myself, but I know there's pickleball courts opening up all over the place. So
yeah, it's funny too because there was this. I think it was about 3 or 4 weeks ago that Dave, my husband, and I went to go pick up groceries at Walmart. We do the order thing and then go pick it up so that we don't have to go in the store and talk to any other people because introverts. And we're sitting there, and they had just built this apartment complex to the north of us, and they're really two tall buildings. And then there's this court there, and Dave says, "Oh, that's a tennis court there." And I looked at it. And I saw the painted insides where the net was. And I'm like, no, that is a pickleball court. And I will tell you why. Okay, enough about pickleball. But that was funny. I really thought that was hilarious. I also, when Mariner was giving them crap for getting a sex bot, and Rutherford goes, "Grow up, Mariner. It's the 80s.
Yes. I did like that as well, for sure.
I don't know why that made me laugh so hard, but it did.
So speaking of Mariner, her whole story is trying to avoid going to the dentist, I guess.
I can relate.
I get that. And Shax is basically assigned to roam the ship trying to find her. Finding her in the holodeck, my favorite bit, by the way, mm-hmm. is... but also, computer, sand! It's like, sand, what are you, piff, right in his face? Okay. It's so random, I love it. Oh, and then Shax reacts to it by yelling, "It burns, I can't see, prophets protect me, what a world, what a world." Oh, God.
Oh, yeah, that was, it's like... What were the holodeck safety protocols off? I mean, yeah. You shouldn't be able to just throw sand in somebody's face, right?
Right. Yeah. Absolutely.
You would think. What do I know though?
I did also like this felt. Maybe I'm reading too much into this, but this felt like a callback to Wrath of Khan. Where Shax is searching for Mariner and he's looking on the thing. He's like, "She should be right in front of me. Wait a minute." And then like goes up through the floor because Mariner's up there. It's like, "Oh, you thought you could hide on the Z-axis." And like Kirk and Khan and Enterprise, you know, doesn't mm-hmm. think three-dimensionally, all that stuff. I was like, it's probably a stretch, but I was like, it reminded me of the Enterprise getting the drop on the Reliant by going a little bit down and thereby outsmarting Khan.
Yeah. And what it reminded me of was Aliens.
Well, the readout for sure. Yeah.
Well, not only that, but him peeking up through the thing, because that's what happens when all the aliens are coming. They're like, they're inside the room. It's like, there's nothing here. And then they look up and one pops open the, ooh. And then just aliens galore,
So good.
one of the best horror movies ever. Just absolutely. Horror action movie. Let's put it that way. And I do love me a badass female protagonist who also has emotions and is fine with it. So, but yeah, that's what I thought. It's like, oh, alien reference. Also really enjoyed the tabletop RPG strategy.
Oh, yeah.
The Norm's programmed with now.
Yeah, so that's the whole reason they got him, was to DM their games, basically. But also, I've been waiting so long for somebody to make that joke about, like, Settlers of Catan and Picard's Catan world. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, here we go. Finally, someone has made that joke.
Yes, and... It also brought me great joy. I have never actually played Settlers of Catan.
It is worth playing. It is a good game.
Yeah, I have seen other people play it. Not an entire game, but yeah. It's one of those things where it went out of print for a really long time. And then all of a sudden, people just kept demanding it. Because I worked at a bookstore during the early 2000s. And people were like, do you have Settlers of Catan? And I'm like, I'm sorry, I don't know what that is. And I tried looking it up and it wasn't in the system. And yeah, it wasn't too long. I think it was less than a year before Settlers of Catan started popping up all over the place again.
Nice. So Norman, basic stories going on. Norman goes berserk. At one point, very brutally, like, eviscerates the dentist. Luckily, yeah, Donna waves a light over him. He's fine. It's all okay.
Yeah, he was bisected, but he's gotten better.
Yeah, and Mariner has dentistry performed on her by a truly terrifying holographic dental robot.
Yes, please state the nature of the dental emergency.
How often do you floss?
Yeah, dentistry and I have a very, very convoluted history. It has brought me nothing but pain and sadness, frankly. Mm. So, you know, I'm there with Mariner. I get it.
So the final bit of the issue, like I said, the last two pages basically deal with them beaming down to Lapeyria, and there's nobody there. Unlike the little blurb, Lapunia isn't even mentioned. So this is all going to get picked up next issue, I guess.
I guess so. And Lapunians, weren't they even mentioned during the Lower Decks series?
I don't recall them. No, I don't think so.
I would remember Lapunians, I think.
The very end of this, I should say, we get next time on Lower Decks with scenes that I assume are going to be in the next issue, but also we have Q on the bridge of the Enterprise D. Thou art directed to return to thine own solar system immediately. And Picard taken over by an energy creature in the episode Lonely Among Us, with Crusher yelling, I judge you to be disabled and mentally incapacitated, at which point Picard does not GAF.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
Sometimes so random, but that's the thing about Lower Decks. They're keeping in the spirit of the randomness of Lower Decks, which is not to say that it's all just an uneven, unconnected mess. It's not. Mm-hmm. But the references that they do throw in, it's always fun because it's just, it's there for people like you and me who have been watching Trek all our lives.
Yeah, definitely. Also, I have to just, for some reason, it just really makes me laugh that the little panels that are doing the next time are all in like CRT tube shaped, like old style cathode ray tube television sets.
I love it. Yep. Yeah, loved that.
So final thoughts on this one. I enjoyed it, even though it wasn't really what was on the tin, which is interesting, but I enjoyed it for just crazy Lower Decks shenanigans. Kept wondering when they were going to get to Lapeyria, like the last episode when I was like, when are they going to get to the fireworks factory? Well, they finally do in this episode, but it's just right at the very end.
Yeah. Yeah. And then still no fireworks.
Still no fireworks. No. But I will give this one giant holographic medical emergency dentistry program that is terrifying.
And I will give it, I enjoyed this as well. There's very few Lower Decks comics that I have not enjoyed. In fact, I can only think of one right off of the top of my head. And even then, it still wasn't the worst thing I've ever read. Mm-hmm. But I will give this two not evil exocomps helping out with some repairs.
Nice, absolutely. As always, Positively Trek is brought to you by its Patreon supporters, including Joyce Mirren, Brandy Jackala, Christina DeClercq-Zalagi, John Guppy, Out of Memory, Patrick Carlin, and Ricky Long. If you'd like to support the podcast, visit patreon.com/positivelytrek. You can join at any level and enjoy early access to episodes, ad-free episodes, episode shoutouts, executive producer credits, and more. Again, that's patreon.com/positivelytrek. Thank you so much to those of you supporting us. We truly do appreciate it. And now, back to the show. Well, from there, we go to the other comic that was released on November 12th. We have Star Trek Strange New Worlds, The Seeds of Salvation, number 3, written by Robbie Thompson with art by Serge Acuna. Publisher's description for this issue. Aboard the Enterprise, chaos erupts as Poilant drones attack without warning. With the ship under fire, Ortegas must push her piloting skills to the limit to buy Uhura a narrow window. One last chance to reconnect with their stranded crew and unlock the deadly mystery hidden within Poilant's strange ancient symbols. Meanwhile, on a desperate mission to locate a missing Starfleet research team and their friend Janair, Chapel, La'an, Una, Spock, Scotty, and their unlikely robotic ally D6 stumble into the clutches of a terrifying parasitic hive mind known as the Seed. That is quite the sentence. As the alien collective tightens its grip, one question looms. Is this the force behind Janair's vanishing, or just the beginning of something far worse? Probably something far worse. I don't know. I don't know why you'd put that in there if it wasn't.
Yeah, it just... I went into this issue with an open mind and hoping that things might go to a place where I was feeling better about it. I was sadly disappointed. I did not enjoy this. I also felt like it was too short. It felt like we hardly had anything happen at all. And we sure as hell did not get enough D6. There was not enough D6. We also have Spock acting out of character again. The artwork, again, it makes it difficult for me to tell who people are when they're wrapped up in vines. Or whatever those are.
Yeah, I sadly have to agree with you on a lot of this. Also, like, just story-wise, it didn't seem to really advance things all that much anyway. I mean, we've got, like, it ends with the big reveal of Number One and La'an wrapped in these vines and stuff, and I was like, weren't we already there? Like, didn't we already kind of know that was happening? I don't know. It isn't grabbing me. And I hate to do this, but there's one frame that just has as many mistakes packed into it as you could possibly have. It's on this two-page splash page, I guess, with the Enterprise being attacked by the drones. And we've got Uhura and Pike talking. So Uhura says, I can't reach the landing party. The science station comms aren't responding. And Pike says, Lieutenant, I can tell by your tone that's not the only bad news you have for me. Okay. So Uhura in that panel is wearing the insignia that she wore when she was a cadet. And not the insignia where she wears now, which is as an ensign, not a lieutenant. So her rank on her uniform is wrong by being too low, and Pike addresses her by a rank too high. What is going on here? I'm sorry. I know it's pedantic and nerdy, but like, come on.
No, it's not. It is not, because there are things about these characters that have been established and they're not checking the details. And that's a problem. And I can't believe that we're the only people who noticed this. I'm sure that there are thousands, if not millions, of others who have also noticed this.
Well, Star Trek fans famously don't pay attention to minute details and really
I know. They don't. They could not care less about canon and just,
No, that's really, they're really a chill group when it comes to that kind of stuff. And
completely.
And yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You see my issue for sure.
I do. I really do. Because I feel the same way.
Yeah. So yeah, there's a little bit of D6, but we don't get the jokiness, which honestly was like the one thing I enjoyed in the last issue. It's just, I don't know, more of the same. We have vines and tendrils and a big tentacled creature. And I'm like, okay. I think stylistically, the one part that I didn't mind was when the sub gets attacked and it kind of is drifting down and it goes black and then just completely black at the end. I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. That's kind of atmospheric and interesting. I liked that, but yeah. Not enough of that, I think.
Agree. It didn't feel like any of it was genuinely our characters.
Mm-hmm.
Especially Spock shouting, no, when they grab Una. It's like he would not do that.
No.
Just like in the previous issue, he would not do that. What are you doing? Do you not understand who Spock is? Who is... anyway, so that was a big problem for me right there. I was just hoping that they would course correct, but they didn't. And I basically what I wrote down at the end of my notes was, do I even care? But I'll keep reading it because we're doing this show.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, definitely. The other thing is, too, and I was thinking about this after the last month's episode where we talked about the similarities between this and the Vesda story in season 3. I kind of almost feel bad for the writers of this comic because I'm sure they came up with this story and were planning it out before that had even been on screen. And like, I'm sure they didn't necessarily know. It really just is unfortunate. Like that on top of all of the issues that we have with the comic, it also has that issue where, oh, we just kind of saw this story, you know, not exactly the same, but a lot of the same beats, a lot of the same kind of framework, right? So it genuinely makes me feel bad for the writers of this story that they're like, wait, we just, aw, you know?
Yeah. But at the same time, it feels like those departments maybe ought to know what each other is doing.
Yeah.
Just like, hey, here's a list of the stuff that we're planning to release in comics for the next year. And let me know if there's any conflicts here.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure that that's not actually what they do, but maybe they should.
Yeah, I mean, I know on the novel side that like all the writers of the novels that came out in the last year had the scripts for the season 3 episodes like 2 years ago, practically at this point.
Yep.
I imagine maybe the comics don't have quite that level. Like Kirsten Beyer, of course, being that liaison is huge.
Mm-hmm.
That said, she has co-written comics before too. So,
yes,
you know, I would wonder if there's some kind of communication there that maybe just didn't happen, or maybe it doesn't happen as a rule. I don't know, but
yeah,
it's unfortunate.
Either. Well, even if the similarities to the Vesda did not exist, this still is not my favorite. It's not grabbing me. Again, do I even care? Was my final thought is, do I even care about any of this?
Mm-hmm.
Also, the Arkan equals fascists. wrote down. That's the fascist right there, the Arkan. So
yeah. Well, what are your final thoughts on this issue? And if you would give it a rating, what would that be?
this had surprisingly little progress. And none of it was actually very interesting, and again, fraught with some problems with incorrect ranks and whatnot, and honestly, just a lot of talking heads for the most part, not a lot of actual action, and what little action we do see seems kind of static. It doesn't feel like there's anything really happening. There doesn't feel like any urgency. It's like, okay, so a bunch of seaweed is just floating around the Enterprise. Why should I care? So, it was unfortunately, it didn't redeem itself with this issue. I'm not sure if it will redeem itself at all, but I will keep going and see what happens. But I will give this excitement is better than boredom.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I can't disagree with you. It's not grabbing me. I'm just not there with this. I feel like maybe they're expecting the kind of Lovecraftian type vibe to do a lot of heavy lifting, and it's just not there for me. Like, it's not making me feel creeped out. It's not really hitting any of those buttons I think that they're going for. I will say this issue, artwork wise, there's still the issues with the characters and that sort of thing. I will say I did notice they changed artists, but they're still going with the same style. But the little submersible drifting away into the darkness, I thought was kind of cool. And there's a shot of Scotty with a phaser rifle with his mouth open. You can see like his molars and his teeth. It's actually a pretty cool composed shot. Doesn't particularly look like Scotty, but it's a cool image. So there's some interesting things, but overall I'm giving this the incorrect badge that Uhura must have mistakenly put on that morning.
What are you gonna do?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to go from there to November 19th's new issue, Star Trek The Last Starship number 2. So this was written by Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing with art by Adrian Bonilla. In the wake of the cataclysm known as the Burn, the dream of a United Federation stands on the brink of extinction. The only thing holding the galaxy back from chaos is Captain Sato and the crew of the Borg-enhanced Omega, a ship fueled by transwarp technology and fraught with distrust. No one on board trusts the Borg, and Captain Sato trusts their mysterious new passenger bearing the face and name of James T. Kirk even less. This so-called Kirk speaks of a dark future, but Sato refuses to be guided by fear or prophecy. When a distress call from the Klingon Empire pierces the silence, urgent, cryptic, and unexpected, Sato doesn't hesitate. Whatever the risk, he will answer. Because if Starfleet's legacy is to survive, it won't be through retreat. It'll be through action. Can I say that is like the best written synopsis ever? Like,
so good.
A ship fueled by transwarp technology and fraught with distrust.
Great. It's perfect because it's not doing it like an old 40s commercial for something. It's like, and this is like the end of every Batman series. Will the Caped Crusader, you know, and all that. It just is building the tension and the interest without being sensationalizing it, and instead of just giving us this is what's happening, and it's building tension without being ridiculous.
Yeah, definitely.
And we're not even reading it yet. We're just reading the beginning.
Just the blurb. Yeah, it's really well written. It's good, and it has me, like, if I hadn't read the comic and I read that, I'd be like, ooh, I want to read this, which is what a good blurb should do. So,
absolutely.
But what about the actual comic? Is it any good?
Well, I guess it depends on your point of view.
Interesting. Let's start with Kirk, I guess, because the comic kind of starts with that. I really like Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing's writing because they kind of get the characters of Star Trek in ways that sometimes people don't, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Like, Kirk is not just the swashbuckling ladies' man, blah, 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 right? Like, he's somebody with a good head on his shoulders who's very well read, who's very well educated. And that comes out in this beginning bit here where he's talking about the classics with Captain Sato. And I really like that. I feel like outside of, you know, the films and the TV show, that side of Kirk doesn't get explored a lot. It's usually more of the, especially in comics, like the heroic leading man of action type thing. Right. And I really like that. I love that part of his character.
I do too. I unfortunately got hobbled by something my husband said. And that is, okay, so they, what, resurrected Kirk? How can he still have all of his memories? And I can't find an answer for that, for real.
Yeah, I don't know, because the version of Kirk that was there, again, somehow Star Trek tech, I don't know, but the version of Kirk that was in that thing was the one that died in Generations, right?
Yeah, so exactly.
If somehow they do transfer all his memories, he'd have them up to that point.
He would, but also, why is he younger?
Because in the first issue, they said resurrected him in his prime, right?
Yeah, who is to decide what his prime is? Because I would
apparently
argue...
Agnes. Agnes is like,
well, you know, Agnes, you go, girl. You get you some Kirk. You go get you some Kirk. You deserve it, girl.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, if this is the only way I can have Agnes back, I'm here to take it, because Agnes got done dirty in Picard. Mm-hmm. She got done dirty, and I'm never going to forgive her for that.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate. Like, I feel like there's never... I could be wrong, but I feel like there's never going to be a television thing that picks up that thread again. Mm-hmm. Which is unfortunate, because that was probably the most fascinating part of season two, even though they did the character dirty, like you say, for sure. And I agree. The idea of the Borg cooperative existing alongside the collective due to time shenanigans, it was interesting. It was really cool. And it would be neat to come back to that. So if this is the only way we do, I guess I'm okay with that. But, yeah, I've always wanted to kind of dig into that a bit more.
Yeah, me too. I just feel like it was wasted opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nice to see her here. I'm not going to complain at all.
So, yeah, we've got some introductions to some new crew members as well. I would say the doctor is kind of the most interesting, the new chief of medicine. So his name is Herculean Sabretash Orkver Purple for Zedacitus.
But you can just call him
Zed, I guess.
Zed, yep.
Yeah, Dr. Zed. We'll go with that. How about? I liked a little bit of exploration through his character. It's brief, but like he's dealing with what's been going on by self-medicating, basically. And it kind of highlights, like, you know, in Discovery, we saw the aftermath of the burn like a century later kind of thing. But here we're getting it like this is a fresh wound. These are like the 2% of people that survived the zombie apocalypse, you know, mm-hmm. They have gone through a civilization size trauma of just unimaginable proportions. And I like that this comic's taking a bit of time to kind of talk through that a little bit and like what that would actually be like.
Yeah. I like that too. And some people might find it a little talky, but I think that's exactly what it needs, because they're basically one of the few starships out there that didn't get blowed up.
Yeah.
And there's just everything is so uncertain right now. And the Federation and Starfleet have not faced a disaster on this level. It's something so extreme that they don't really have any kind of plan for what to do when something like this happens. And so I appreciate kind of seeing that in this comic, because, you know, I know a lot of people didn't like season 3 of Discovery. You know, I liked all seasons of Discovery. Thank you very much. There might have been aspects that I didn't like here and there, but I just thought, what a novel idea. What a novel idea. What an interesting way. Because, like, oh, going into the future, and the future isn't what you expect it to be. Of course, it never can be what you expect it to be, but for it to have become this fractured thing. Genius! That's a genius way to start a time travel into the future.
Yeah.
So I'm loving that we backtracked and we're finding out how people initially reacted to this, how Starfleet initially reacted to this, how Federation of Planets started reacting to this. It's I love this for that reason, because I want to know more. I want to fill in those gaps.
Yeah. And I'm really enjoying this, the way they're telling this story. It's for one thing, talky, which Star Trek is. Like, that's it what is. Star Trek is. And it's beautiful. Like, the artwork is incredible. And it's stylized. It's a little different than your typical way they tend to do comics, but, or Star Trek comics anyway. But I love it. It's this really cool style. You know, the faraway shots, they're kind of, you know, a little bit less detailed, but when you get in close, like, the amount of detail they've put into the faces and these characters, so good. And then, yeah, we've got this whole thing with the Klingons. And there's an interesting thing from the previous issue where I think Sato says to the Gorn, the last time that a starship fired on another in this galaxy was 30 years ago between one of our ships and one of yours. So these people are completely unprepared for this. Like, this is completely outside their, any lived experience, right? Or, you know, for a few people, maybe not, I don't know, but like, it's definitely uncommon. And, they come under fire by the Klingons and they're just totally like, this is a brand new situation. That's an interesting thing. Like, that's interesting to me. A true utopia where, like, no ship has fired on another for decades, now launched into this era. Like, they would be so ill prepared for the way their entire universe has been turned upside down.
Absolutely. And there's no rule book to follow. There's no contingency plan. And everybody's looking for someone to blame. Mm-hmm. And of course, anybody who's not part of the Federation is blaming the Federation. They're blaming Starfleet without even knowing what started it in the first place, how it happened, any of that. Of course, we, of course, know. Mm-hmm. But watching them piece this together, and the art style to me, I really love it, just like you do. It just reminds me of classic comics with a present day twist to it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best way I can describe it, because it's just a lot of those long shots. It feels like, yeah, this is something I would see in a comic from the 80s, and I love it.
Yeah. And even like that pattern of coloring where it's just dots, right? Like,
yes. Yes.
There's so much of that. It's beautiful. It's gorgeous.
It really is.
That final splash page where Kirk walks onto the bridge, you know, James T. Kirk reporting for duty, permission to engage the enemy, as, you know, the bridge is exploding around him. It's just beautiful.
It is. It's one of the, I think it might be one of my most favorite of all Star Trek comics as far as art style. And we're not that far into the series quite yet, so I'm not sure what's going to happen. But this will probably stay in my top 10 for quite some time. Just nice. A spoiler alert, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I guess final thoughts and rating for The Last Starship number 2.
I love Sato, but Sato is an idealist.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't realize that he can't be an idealist now. That is not what this universe now is. It's not what the galaxy is anymore. It's not what the Federation is anymore. There is no more idealism. And I think he's going to wake up to that at some point, and probably because of Kirk. And frankly, that's why they need Kirk. Kirk is probably the only person that can get them out of this. And I can't wait to see what he does. I can't wait to see what they do. It sucked me in with the first issue, and it just continues to give me great story, great artwork, interesting look into a period that we only know the post of it, you know, the after of it. We don't know the during. And I love seeing the during. I love seeing what they're going to do and how they're going to figure things out. And it's, I don't know, there's a lot of space where you can put stories in between seasons 2 and 3 of Discovery. That's the beauty of it, is there's 920 years that you can just fill those in. And I love that they're doing that with the burn. So finally, and I know it's not canon. I know it's not canon, but to me, you know, it's always going to live in that space where we didn't have, you know, a series telling us what happened there. So I'm going to give this one Ferengi on bliss drugs.
I like that. Yeah, I can't hide how much I'm just gleefully enjoying this comic. It's so good. It's so interesting. And it feels like it's telling something important, right? Like it's telling an important story. There's so many things that we didn't touch on. There's the characters. There's this Bajoran character who dies, and the Klingon characters, you know, obviously very close to her. And like, that's going to be big going forward for sure. There's so much going on in here. Honestly, it's kind of hard to kind of pick the little threads to talk about, but I think we're in for a really wild ride with this, and I cannot wait to see where it goes, because these first two issues have been so good and like way better than I even imagined they could be. So I'm going to give this one Jurati Borg queen in engineering, just like gripping those cables on either side and powering this ship through sheer will, it looks like.
Yeah, because Jurati's a badass.
Yeah, and I just loved that image. That was so cool. Oh, man. Can you tell I like this one?
I don't know. You seem kind of ambivalent.
Eh, it's okay. Well, from there, we go to the final comic release this month, as of the release of this episode just a few days ago, Star Trek Voyager Homecoming #3 from November 26th, written by Susan and Tilly Bridges, with art by Angel Hernandez. To save the Federation and the entire Alpha Quadrant, Captain Janeway made the ultimate sacrifice, deleting Species 8472's data on opening a singularity into normal space. Now Voyager is stranded in fluidic space, and 8472 wants them dead. Hunted by a relentless alien fleet, Janeway and her crew go on the run, weaving through planets and asteroid fields in a desperate bid to survive. But just as hope begins to fade, Voyager sensors detect something unexpected, the wreckage of a Borg cube. Is it a lifeline back to the galaxy they call home, or the beginning of an even greater threat?
Way to spoil the entire freaking plot of this issue. I mean, seriously, that was too much.
Well, in the words of Harry Kim, maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey.
The journey, right. And it's also funny how they keep calling it normal space. It's only normal space for us. It's not normal for 8472. And they have a name.
Yeah, right? What is it, though?
I know! Give them a name!
So I enjoyed this issue. I think maybe not as much as the second one. It felt a little bit meandering at times, but I'm digging it. I'm digging it. I'm kind of curious to see where it goes from here. The one question that I had is, this is fluidic space. And I actually kind of had this problem in Scorpion Part 2 as well, when Voyager goes to fluidic space. Like, what's the pressure like in there? Is the ship able to hold up under this? And then my brain started going really weird when they flew the 8472 ship into Voyager's shuttle bay, which I know has a force field that lets ships in but keeps the air in. How does it know, like, it's fluid in this space? How does it know what to let in and what not to let? My brain started going crazy, and I'm like, okay, no, I can't I can't worry about this.
down the rabbit hole.
I don't understand. I don't understand fluidic space. Mm-mm. I admit it. I don't.
I think that that is actually the problem with anyone who writes about species 8472, whether it be in the series, in comics, whatever, because they haven't really fully defined what fluidic space is like. Mm-hmm. And therefore, our brains are trying to fill in the gaps, but we don't have the information. So,
yeah.
So somebody, please, somebody, I'm begging you, please just fill in the blanks for us. We want to know what fluidic space is. We want to know what species 8472 is named. We want to know all of these things. And you can give them to us in comics. Please do that.
Yeah. I'm just going to go with until proven otherwise, even though I wasn't playing the game at this point. I drifted away, but I think Star Trek Online called them the Undine. And I'm like, okay, that works.
Undine. Okay.
Yeah. I'm going to go with that.
Well, sure. Let's just start calling them the Undine because it's shorter.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I am very much enjoying this story. Like my previous comments from last month hold up. The character voices are so perfectly done in this. Mm-hmm. B'Elanna and Tom and the Doctor, especially. Also, Seven, Chakotay, Janeway, all of them. They all sound like the characters, and it's brilliant. I love it.
I do, too. I my favorite line was B'Elanna saying to Tom, "I've seen those hands at work, mister. Speed it up."
I did like that line. I was like, oh, nudge, nudge, wink, wink. I see.
And I love another thing I love is that because the Doctor got deactivated, 7 and 9 was taking care of the role.
That was adorable.
That just warmed my heart.
Absolutely. Just
sweet. But yeah, it's one of those, this one feels kind of like a little bit like a placeholder.
A little bit, yeah.
Just a little bit, not completely. And there have been far worse placeholders in Star Trek comics, believe me. But it just feels like this was a lot of exposition without a lot of actual new information.
Mm-hmm.
So
kind of lining up the dominoes,
yes,
for what's going to happen in the, you know, the final two issues, it feels, yeah, like.
It's and I'm not going to say that it's just complete filler. There are things that happen, but it feels like there could have been more here. And they could have progressed some other parts of the story. They could have given us a freaking name for them, you know, things like that. But, you know, it just feels like one of those, it almost feels like a commercial break. Mm-hmm. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, I could see that. I do like where we're left at the end of the comic. Again,
yes,
lining up those dominoes, kind of putting them in place for the final bit of the story. I like that they have this choice, right? Janeway says, "I have a choice to make. Destroy the Borg and ally with species 8472, giving them the ability to get back to our space, or ally with the Borg, hope we make it home, and risk dropping nearly 100 drones on Earth's doorstep." So we're kind of back to the you know, beginning of season 4. Do we ally with the 8472 or the Borg, you know?
Well, and this Borg collective, basically, you know, they don't have a queen. They just decided, well, let's just keep going. So there's no hierarchy anymore, really.
Yeah.
There's no queen. So he's just one of, what was it, 73?
I think so, yeah.
And then the others is 2 of 73, 3 of 73. There's nobody who's higher above any other Borg in this particular situation. And so in this case, they are a true collective.
I do want to learn more about them.
Yes.
And if I was in Janeway's position, I'd want to learn more about them. Like, how far can we trust these folks? You know, like,
but that's the thing. It's like the lesser of two evils. Mm-hmm. How much experience do they have with the Undine versus the Borg.
Yeah.
Which one are they more familiar with? Which one can they fight better? I would go with the Borg, too, personally.
Well, we'll see where it goes in the next couple issues. It's setting up a really interesting dilemma, and you know, those are the best stories, right? Where
there's a
tough dilemma we got to figure out, and yeah, we'll see how Janeway does with this one.
Yeah, it'll be interesting for sure, because this comic did not start in a way that I thought it would. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, oh my God, can't you just let them go home?
See, this is why I would be a terrible television writer, and it turns out probably a comic writer and stuff. Like, my characters that I love, I just want them to have a good day.
Yeah.
Like, can we just not fight the Borg today? Can we just, you know, like, all hang out in the mess hall and just be friendly?
Yeah. Can we all just get along?
Yeah. You
know, we're not so different.
Terrible writer.
Same.
What's the conflict? Conflict? Heavens no. No.
We don't do conflict here. This is the future.
Oh, man. Well, I'm going to say I loved this issue. Again, maybe not quite as high as the second one, but I really enjoyed it, even though it feels a little bit treading water at times, but treading fluidic space at times. It's good. It's still really good. I think of all the comics that have familiar characters, this one captures their voices the best.
Agreed.
So I'm going to give this one shuttle bay that is or is not flooded. I don't understand. somebody explain this to me. I don't get it.
You've broken Dan, you bastards. Yeah, I also really enjoyed this. I'm enjoying the series as a whole, even though I'm just like, just let them go home. But it's okay. I understand why they're doing what they're doing. And it's, you know, that's the thing, is we didn't get the canon ending that we should have. It was just like, oh, hey, welcome back to Earth. Series over.
Yeah.
Just so abrupt. So abrupt. I was very disappointed. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I love Tom and B'Elanna together, because we didn't have enough of that either, really, in the series. I think they could have had more of that. And overall, I want to see what comes next. I want to see how they handle things. I want to know more about this true Borg collective group over here of 73 people. And I want to know how they get home, because they're going to have to get home, because we know they get home. I will give this 1/7 of 9 taking care of Morale while the doctor cannot be reactivated.
I love it. That's awesome. Well, with that, I guess, and I feel like I already know the answer to this, but Brandy, what was your favorite comic of these 5 this month?
That's tough to say. No, it's Last Starship.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah. Last Starship walks away with it, I think, for sure. Mm-hmm. I agree with you 100% with that one. Maybe a more interesting question. What's the runner up for you?
It would be the Lower Decks one, because it's just ridiculous and funny and made me laugh out loud. And Sand in the Eye. Just Settlers of Catan. Just that's, things like that. Yeah. Sex bot doing DMing. It's ridiculous fun.
I think mine would be, it's a tough one between Voyager and Red Shirts. I think Red Shirts. It's just, it's such a satisfying series. But Homecoming's up there too, for sure. They're all pretty high up there except for one.
Yeah, except for the one. Yeah, you know which one, guys.
Yeah. Well, with that said, let's close the book on November. Next month, we're back down to 4 issues next month, a little bit more manageable. We have Star Trek Red Shirts number 5, Lower Decks number 14, Strange New Worlds, The Seeds of Salvation number 4, and The Last Starship number 3. So continuing four of the stories from this month will be next month. So I'll have to wait an extra month for the next Voyager Homecoming issue. Well, Brandy, when you're not here talking comics with me, where can people find you? What do you got going on in the world of podcasting?
I have a podcast with my husband called Shield Podulation, where we randomly pick an episode / movie / short of Star Trek and talk about it. As of this recording, the most recent one that we did was Deep Space Nine Season 1, Episode, I believe, 14, if I remember right. If I'm not getting them confused. And it was called The Storyteller. And we raked that one over the coals pretty hard.
The Dal Rock Awakens!
Thanks, Gandalf! Oh, I mean, come dear. On, Dalrock, Balrog, come on. You don't see the... anyway. we have a great time with that. And also, I pop up on guest appearances on other podcast networks. I have fairly recently, had a new episode of A Dream Given Form, which is a Babylon 5 podcast, and talking about the Season 3 episode Shattered Dreams, which is one of the best episodes in all of Babylon 5, and I called dibs first because I'm just that good.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, wow. I cry during the episode too. So there you go, because that episode is game changer. It's absolute game changer for the series. So
ooh, I think I'm due for a Babylon 5 rewatch now, man.
I know, right? I got the Blu-rays when they finally made a fairly good Blu-ray set put it out, but the packaging, the actual place, the things that hold the discs, terrible. Mm. Absolutely terrible. I do not understand why no company can get that right.
Yeah.
None. It's just, hey, just please, I don't put them in like padded sleeves, okay? This sort of pressing them down on this thing that's supposed to lock them in, and then you have to use both hands to pull it back up. It's just, yeah. Stop doing
and then,
it.
And then just one of those teeth breaks off and suddenly it just doesn't stay on.
Yeah. And then every time you move it, you hear it rattling around and it's getting scratched up. And yeah, I have strong feelings about that. But you'll hear me on that. At some point, you'll probably hear me on on Make It So podcast, but that probably won't be until next year. So heads up. And other than that, it's just doing this and having a great time.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, everybody, for joining us. We really do appreciate it. Join us again next month, at the end of next month, or this month. I don't know. What you're probably listening to this in December, so join us at the end of the month for another set of comics. I think I'm going to go to bed, so thank you once again for joining us. We'll see you next time, and until then, as always, stay positive. Positively Trek is produced and edited by me, Dan Gunther, and co-produced by Barry DeFord on Treaty 8 territory, the home of the Beaver, Cree, Dene, and Métis people, whose histories, languages, and cultures we respect. We acknowledge the many First Nations, Métis, and Inuit who have lived in and cared for these lands for generations.
See you out.